الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. The 59th sin is في من ادعى إلى غير أبيه وهو يعلم. Is that individual who claims for someone else to be their father or their progeny, but and they're not really, that's not his lineage. I mean, he's claiming a lineage that's not their own. وَهُوَ يَعْلَمُ, and he actually knows that. عن سعيد رضي الله تعالى عنه قال قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم من ادعى إلى غير أبيه وهو يعلم أنه غير أبيه أنه غير أبيه فالجنة عليه حرام, أو كما قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم in comes in Bukhari, that whoever claims other than his father while he knows that he is not his father, then as basically his father, then this person, upon them Jannah is haram. And from Abu Huraira رضي الله تعالى عنه عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال لا ترغبوا عن أبائكم فمن رغب عن أبيه فهو كافر. Do not turn away from your fathers and forefathers, basically. فمن رغب عن أبيه, and whosoever turns away from his fathers, or from your fathers, you could say, and whosoever turns away from his father, so that person is a kafir. And also in this regard, it was said, من ادعى إلى غير أبيه فعليه لعنة الله. And so whosoever ascribes themselves or claims a lineage other than his father, فعليه لعنة الله, and upon such an individual is the curse of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala azza wa jal. So this is something that the deen seems to be very stern about claiming parentage from someone who's not really your parent. And the first question that might arise in a person's mind is, why is the deen so strict about that? Who really cares? You can call anyone your father. You cannot. I mean, why is this such a big deal? And why is it a kabira? And if you read the Maqasid al-Sharia, you know, and they have been documented, Imam Ghazali rahimahullah, he also talks about this. Imam Shatibi also has, you know, writings on the topic. And there, you can distill them to five different maqasid, or five different objectives of the Sharia. And the way the Sharia is designed, and the hikmah behind it, is it seeks to preserve and protect a person's intellect, a person's honor, a person's wealth, a person's lineage, nasab. So now, if you think about it, a lot of the things that are in life, I don't know if I mentioned that, but life as well. So now, you think about many of the rulings in the deen, then it really starts making sense. Why is murder wrong? Because it's taking away the sanctity of life. Why is stealing wrong, or, you know, thievery, or brigandry, or highway robbery? Because it's taking away the sanctity of a person's wealth. And so Islam is trying to protect that. Why is drinking or drugs wrong? Because it takes away your aql. And then it also addresses sometimes what is a really thorny issue of people saying that, look, if the guy and girl want to do it, it's their choice, they're not hurting anyone else, then why does Islam have any problem with it? Why does it tell them that you can only do it within the realm of marriage? And the simple answer to that is, who's the daddy? That's really what it comes down to. Who's the daddy? And, you know, you can make this argument of, oh, you know, now we have DNA testing, and you have paternity testing, and you can use, you know, paternity testing is the same thing they use in forensics and other, like, you know, chimerism studies. They use restriction fragment length polymorphisms, and they use that to sort of type the individual and, you know, determine parentage. One thing to understand is, you know, there's several things about that, and I was asked about this by Zambia, because there's some Mufti Council, and they had gotten this question. It was a big court case, and, you know, they had to try to decide it. And they said, "Oh, we found that you work in genetics, and what do you think about this issue?" And so one of the things I told them is that, look, no test is 100%. We think like there's these magic boxes that everything works like perfectly. Like even your Mac and your iPhone doesn't work perfectly. Everything has bugs, right? Nothing is 100%, and there's no test in medicine that's 100%. We know that. That's why you talk about things like sensitivity and specificity and positive predictive value and negative predictive value, because you're going to miss something. There's limitations, and there's analytic sensitivity, so on and so forth. So I think that's one thing. The other thing is that the dean's general approach in the way that is that of general applicability. The dean was not really designed so that it can only be established, it can only be practiced in a first world country, or that it would be practiced differently in a first world country as opposed to a third world country, or that it would be practiced, you know, only in the 21st century when there was the onset of genetic testing, and for, you know, 14 centuries before that it wasn't really applicable. It doesn't even make sense. That this was the final message until the final day. And the general approach is the dean doesn't generally get molecular about things, right? We can get molecular about the things, but the dean is granular, right? It's not finely granular, it's sort of granular, and it's granular for a reason, because it wasn't meant to become onerous. It wasn't meant to become difficult. And it's this protection of nesab, this protection of lineage that makes fornication, adultery so heinous. And why is nesab, in turn, why is that so important? Because without nesab, there's no concept of a family. And that is the undergirding of an entire society. If you don't have family, how do you build a society? That's the basic building block. And it's exactly that building block that's being torn apart in this day and age, in particular in this country. They say that only one, that a child will end up with their biological father only 50% of the time by the time they become a teenager. I mean, how does that feel when you're a 9-year-old and you don't have your biological dad around anymore? That takes an immense psychological toll, an emotional toll, a spiritual toll on an individual. And we're feeling it by society. You know, sometimes people think, oh, the whole country, the world has gone crazy. The whole U.S. has gone crazy. These kids are going up and shooting up schools. These kids are cutting themselves. I mean, you have cutters in school. You have people who are, suicide attempts. You have kids who are depressed. You have people who have angst. And like, where is all this coming from? And part of that is that it's not a stable household. There's not a good replacement for mom and dad. I don't care how much you paid for that daycare, right? And I don't care how much you paid for that Montessori. They're not mom, they're not dad. Your children know it, and you know it. And trying to replace that fundamental, iconic institution of family by something else, right? Even if it's an iPad or TV or, you know, outsourcing them to someone else and having live-in nannies, something's missing. And we're feeling it. We're feeling it. So the dean is trying to protect family. So now, obviously, in this situation, a person not committing zina, but basically by claiming a parentage other than this, they're transgressing the bounds of nesab, right? They're deconstructing the concept of nesab. And this was something that was actively preserved by Islam. Now, the next question that comes out is, does this have any practical applications? Like, does this even come up in real life? And believe it or not, it actually does. It actually does. It actually happened in my own situation at one time. When I was in South Africa and I was studying my final year, I knew this from before, but I guess it never dawned on me with such clarity, because when you're studying and you're learning all the masail, and you're sometimes these things, you know about it, but it doesn't really hit you. I knew that my great-grandfather had changed our last name. So my name is Husseini, right? Last name Husseini, but that's not really my last name. I think it's something like Mahbub or something. So, people think you're Husseini. They're like, MashaAllah, you're from the family of Rasulullah. I was like, no, I'm not. Because they think Hassan, you're either like from Hassan or Hussein, so you're from the lineage of Hassan. I'm like, I'm not Sayyid, my wife's family is, but no, I'm not. And so when we had our daughter, and it's actually still like this on her social security card and her birth certificate, we named her Maryam Amatullah bint Umar. Right? Bint Umar, daughter of Umar. So now imagine family members, they're like, bint Umar? We're Husseinis, right? What's this bint Umar? So now, like, you know, you can imagine the type of, you know, jolly fun we had trying to, and we were like, no, it's really about, you know, the deen and Sharia. But people are like, you know, they make their own, they have their own theories about why you're actually changing the last name. You know, they take it personally. They're like, you don't want to be part of our family? You don't, like, what is, I mean, and it's like, I don't know if it's a subcontinent thing, but it becomes very emotionally charged. And the same thing applies to, for example, women changing their last names. So she marries the husband, and there's an expectation that she changes her last name to her husband's last name. If you're not, then what are you? What, you don't want to be part of our family? No, you don't, and it's really, there's a tremendous amount of pressure to do that. So that actually raises the larger question that, is it permissible for a woman, when she gets married, to change her last name to her husband's last name? And the short answer is that yes, it's permissible. Doesn't mean that you have to do it. It doesn't mean that you should do it. It means that you can do it. This practice of changing the surname or the last name to that of the husband was not something which was, I guess, historically particularly Islamic. It wasn't an Islam thing. In the time of Rasulullah or in the times of the Sahaba, people were known by their parents. So Abdullah ibn Umar, Abdullah ibn Abbas, both are Abdullahs, radiallahu ta'ala anhumah, but they would be known by their lineage. So they would be called by the son of so-and-so. But it's not particular, you won't say that this is necessarily a bid'ah. Because there, and I'll give you some substantiation for this. The idea that when the woman changes her last name to the name of her husband is more for identification purposes. To understand that this is this person's household, right? This is the family unit, and then function like that. If you do it with that intention, then it would be okay. If a woman actually does it with the intention that I don't want nothing to do with my family, they're anonymous people, they're ignoble, and I don't want to have anything to do with them, this is my family, and as if they're claiming lineage from them, like I'm from this khandan because it's much more prestigious, then that would not be okay. The only basis for that would be the purpose of identification. So there's examples of that. Where's that? One example is that of Salim, who was the freed slave of Abu Hudhayfa. For his whole life, he went under the name of Salim Mawla Abu Hudhayfa. Salim, who's the freed slave of Abu Hudhayfa. Even though that wasn't his father, but that's how he was known, and that was used for identification purposes. You weren't calling him by some other name. Another example is Abdullah ibn Umm Maktum. This means that Abdullah, the son of Umm Maktum. So in this situation, technically he should take his father's name to show his lineage. But Umm Maktum, he's taking his mother's name. But this was how he was known. And for identification purposes, it formed the basis that you could take it. Another example is Miqdad ibn Umar. Miqdad ibn Amr, sorry. He was a Sahabi whose father was Amr, but he was always known not as Miqdad ibn Amr, but he was known as Miqdad ibn Aswad. Aswad wasn't his name. And this was even after Surah Al-Ahzab, the fifth verse, Ud'uhum li abaihim huwa aqsatu inda Allah. Even after that was revealed, he was still referred to as Miqdad ibn Aswad. So it shows that it wasn't abrogation of that, it was known that it was from a different thing, and this is the fatwa of Imam Qurtubi as well. So the summary for that is permissible, you can take the name but you don't necessarily have to, and the thing to be careful about is that we don't mislead anyone by claiming a lineage other than ours. And it's surprising sometimes kids, they want their own identity, right? Teenagers, and so sometimes they'll be like, I don't want to know this, I like this name, this has a nice ring to it. And they change it, and then they change their family name. So, you know, a person just has to be careful about that.